At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And welcome in, everyone, to the Monday edition of Robbie and Rexrode. I'm Joe Rexrode. Robbie is out this week. We've got a legend in the studio with us, Mr. Mark. Yes, I'm looking at you, Mark Howard. I'm looking at you.
Good to be with you, Joe.
And we got a special show today. We're gonna talk Titans Bucks, of course, and break down the preseason game from Saturday night. Titans win 34-3. Super Bowl bound, presumably.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Mike Vrabel, who, of course, yesterday told us that he is positive for COVID-19. And so that has, it seems to be healthy, but that has, of course, thrown things into another little bit of chaos over at St. Thomas.
It's thrown Tampa and the NFL into a panic because he was seen talking face-to-face with Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of immediately, pictures being tweeted out of who he was close to. So we'll see, what else comes of that. But we're also, we're going to spend a lot of time today, Mark, talking about Floyd Reese, the former Titans GM. Very sad. He passed away over the weekend, age 73, battled cancer for several months. And, frankly, I can't think of many people better to speak on Floyd, what he meant in all his time here in Nashville than you. I mean, you were there the whole time. So I just want to start with that, Mark. What came to mind Saturday, and what comes to mind for you when we talk about Floyd Reese?
Well, I couldn't think of a better person to cover. When the NFL first came to town, Floyd was very generous in terms of sort of showing us the ropes. And, the great thing was, my favorite memories, as a lot of media people have, me, Jim Wyatt, Kuharsky, Terry McCormick, people like that, of standing, watching practice, Floyd would come out, always gave you the morning, Bo. That was and that's still really a greeting in the building at St. Thomas Sports Park. Kind of the old school people will give you the good morning, Bo. But teaching you, or at least educating you, on roster building. Why he didn't want every receiver, for instance, to be the same. They had a really good core of receivers, whether it was Ike Bird, Chris Sanders, at the bottom of the rotation. And he would talk about his thoughts in how he wanted to put his team together. But, very engaging. But you crossed him, you heard about it. But still, through the years, a great guy to work with, had great stories, would give you the Bud Grant stories, some really funny ones about, he broke in with the Detroit Lions, and obviously went to Minnesota, and just the paths that he crossed through the years was fascinating. And then there was the whole thing with Jeff Fisher. The fact that he and Jeff did not see eye to eye, and that pretty much wasn't a secret. I mean, it wasn't like the Titans tried to bury it or did bury it. Everybody knew it existed. And there wasn't so much a Floyd camp and a Jeff camp, but that was kind of strange through the years. And now, to me, you know, sadness that they were never able to mend fences. You know, we can sit here and point the finger of blame at who didn't want to do it. But that's too bad because they did too many good things together. You know, you think about, you know, Jimmy Johnson being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and talking about Jerry Jones, who he was estranged from for a long time. But in terms of Floyd, Joe, and I know, you know, you've heard this and you got to know Floyd, of course, with him working here. He had no hobbies. It was football. He was a dedicated runner. He jogged every day. He was in phenomenal shape. But really for Floyd, you know, it was football, it was family, it was running, and that was pretty much it. Didn't have a boat, you know, wasn't a big guy about vacations or anything like that. I mean, this was his life's love. You know, he was passionate about this, spent a lot of hours at the office, but you think about his contribution to this city, you know, coming in, first year of the new stadium, taking them to the Super Bowl, and the Titans having that extended run, one Super Bowl, two conference championships. They were perennial contenders, you know, for a pretty good amount of time here. And just, you know, Floyd being engaging, you know, selling the team, selling, you know, the NFL in this city, and just what he meant to Nashville. You know, he loved the Titans. He loved Nashville. And he will always go down as one of the iconic figures, not only in the history of the franchise, but in the history of this city.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Jeff Fisher thing. I mean, it's obviously very sad that Floyd will not be there. So we actually just found out over the weekend, it's going to be November 21st. So that's the Texans game. They're going to have Bum Phillips for the Colts game, and the, you know, Jeff and Floyd for the Texans game. And it's very sad he won't be there, obviously, to enjoy it with his family. I'm glad he got to know this. I mean, I think that's huge that he found out last month the Titans announced it, told him, they had a comment from him about, you know, how much it means. So he, you know, he knew it. His family obviously will be there, be bittersweet. But I'm with you. I mean, and you were here for that time period with him and Jeff Fisher. I mean, it's too bad that this many years later that couldn't have been mended.
Yeah, and, you know, Floyd was very stubborn. He was. And, you know, in a lot of situations, you know, you crossed him, you know, you were kind of dead to him. But the other thing about Floyd, you know, you think about those 1998 and 1999 and even 2000 drafts. You know, the 99 draft was huge. Javon Kearse, you know, fell to the Titans, and that turned out to be a phenomenal pick. But you look, you know, who else, you know, they got in that draft. You know, John Thornton was a huge pick for them. You know, the year before, you know, they got Samari Roll, Derek Mason. You know, Kevin Dyson, even though he didn't have a huge career here, he was in the middle of some big moments, and had he not hurt his knee, you know, we've always said, you know, it would have been bigger. But the 99 draft produced, you know, five or six players that really contributed, you know, to those teams in the next 3 or 4 years. So it was not insignificant. And, you know, and you look, you know, getting Derek Mason in the middle rounds and him, you know, turning out to be one of the better receivers in the NFL for the next decade. You know, and a guy like Joe Salavea, you know, who was here for 4 or 5 years, you know, might have been a quote unquote rotational player, but he was a good player. And for that Super Bowl team, picking up a guy like, you know, like Jason Fisk, you know, who turned out to be, you know, a really good role player, you know, getting Craig Hendrick, you know, a couple of years before, one of the better punters in the league. You know, so you look around and obviously, you know, Eddie George, even before that, and how, you know, Eddie was another guy who fell pretty far in the first round of the draft. People wondered if he had the speed to be a good NFL running back. And as it turned out, he did just fine.
Yeah, he did okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you look, I mean, 95 and 96 back to back. I mean, you know, first round picks, and that's, you know, the foundation. I mean, that's still, those are still now, you know, a quarter century later, iconic figures here and, you know, foundational pieces for a Super Bowl run. And like you said, I mean, Samari Roll in 98, the 99 draft, I mean, a lot of players who meant a great deal. And then you go Bullock, you know, in the first round in 2000. I mean, it's a heck of a run, you know, and I mean, even like a Robert Smith, you know, late in a draft, you know, guys like that. And then some, you know, some free agent.
Getting Vandenbosch. Kyle Vandenbosch had been drafted by Arizona, had a litany of knee injuries, and, you know, everybody felt like, you know, he was pretty much going to wash out of the league. And not only comes to the Titans, but becomes an every snap guy, which is pretty amazing, you know, given his injury history. So, yeah, that was one of the great free agent pickups. And we learned with Floyd, you know, how difficult it was in that era to keep a team together with some of the guys they lost, you know, because of the salary cap. You know, the first significant loss was John Runyon off the Super Bowl team, a right tackle who had a terrific run with the Eagles, went to a Super Bowl with them, and, you know, that was hard. And then the pain of, you know, having to see Samari Roll walk away, just, you know, to see Derek Mason walk away, and just, you know, a lot of good players, you know, because Floyd had to make choices, and we went through that with him to try to, you know, keep the team competitive and just learn that, you know, being a general manager in the NFL is a precarious existence.
No doubt. Well, and, you know, Runyon, by the way, you know, late fourth round pick in 96. I mean, again, a lot of value in these drafts. But that's one thing Mike Vrabel, you know, of course, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel both spoke after the game in Tampa. And that's one thing Vrabel brought up is, you know, you don't see it too often when you have a GM of a pro team and it basically inevitably goes bad at some point, right? In a salary cap league, I mean,
yeah,
at some point it's going to, you know, it's a question whether you can survive the downs, you know, if you have ups as a GM as he did. But like Vrabel said, you know, you don't always see someone like that then sort of, you know, it's part of the sports community in the town years later and celebrated here. And I just have to think, Mark, that has, you know, something to do or maybe a lot to do with just Floyd's personality. I'll tell you that the first time I met him, which would have been 5 years ago, I knew Floyd Reese as an NFL, you know, someone who followed the NFL. And I couldn't believe how, you know, kind and just unassuming he was as a person. And I understand that being in media is different than being in that job. But I feel like he maybe didn't exactly fit the mold of the, even though, like you said, he's a football guy, but he was a kind of a kinder, gentler football guy.
He wasn't one of these, and Bill Polian, you know, can be engaging, but you could never get anything out of Bill Polian. He wouldn't tell you anything. Floyd would at least after the fact, you know, give you some information, nothing that, you know, was going to help you day to day, but he would give you great background. And he would tell you, and a lot of GMs don't do this. He would tell you about, I wanted X player in the third round, and I had to settle for Y. And that to me is always fascinating, and I'm sure to you, because the fortunes of a team can rise and fall, you know, sometimes, you know, on those middle rounds and who you're focused on and don't get and who you end up with. You know, you go back to the 99 draft, but he not only got Curse in the first round and Thornton in the second, he got Zach Piller in the third.
Right.
You know, Zach was a staple on that offensive line for a few years. Donald Mitchell, who still might be the best slot corner that they've ever had since they've been here. You know, the year before, he got Kevin Long in the seventh round, who was a starter for 4 years before he got injured and had to retire. So you're right. It does eventually go bad. But when Floyd was hot, you know, he put together some really good drafts.
All right, we're going to take a break here, Robbie Erickson. Just to let you know, we are going to have Corey Curtis, Jim Wyatt. We're going to have Blake Bettingfield on later. John Robinson is going to be on Darren Donick and Jason. And Jared's show, really special show today, all about Floyd. Stillman & Company, they're going to have Nick Saban will be on, Derek Mason, Chris Sanders, John Clayton. and more than that as well. So here we are in the Wholesaling Studios powered by Rumble.com. We'll be right back on Robbie and Rex Road. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, here on 102.5 The Game. If you'd like to get involved in the discussion today, call or text the 102.5 The Game phone or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Talking about Floyd Reese, Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard here, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will, all in the studio here on a Monday morning. And Mark, when this came through Saturday, I actually found out via Jared Stillman's tweet about Floyd passing away. Was in Florida, was actually at my grandma's house in Venice, about to drive up to Tampa for the game, but sort of texting some people and texted John Robinson and said, hey, I know you're going to be in there tonight, but you got a few minutes. So got on the phone with him, and he told me a really interesting story that I had not heard, and he sort of gave a brief repeat of that story after the game. But I found it really interesting. This basically Floyd, of course, not a great ending, and usually GMs in professional sports don't have great
endings.
It really
never ends well. Yeah.
Like, when does it end well? Basically, if you retire and you have just been on a championship run, right? I mean, how often does that happen? What percentage? It's a very low percentage. But so you're talking, 10 years? Talking 10 years, apparently, Floyd had no contact with Steve Underwood and, various members of the organization, called up. And now this is Steve Underwood, who at the time was president and CEO.
Understand, Steve Underwood was Bud Adams' consigliere. He was his hatchet man. So a lot of times, Steve Underwood was the guy to deliver the bad news to, some of the executives and higher-ups in the organization. I had not heard the story either, so please go on.
Yeah, so essentially, after John had been hired, and of course Amy Adams Strunk had recently been named controlling owner, which has turned out to be a fantastic move for this franchise, and this was really just the early stages of 2016, trying to basically start over and go in a different direction. So after John Robinson had been hired, he was director of player personnel with the Bucks. Underwood called him into his office and said, hey, just want you to know, like, I haven't talked to Floyd in a decade, basically, and he called me on your behalf and was effusive on his behalf, essentially. So, again, getting John on the phone, and then, of course, that's what he talked about at the press conference. Obviously, that's foremost in his mind. Like, think about that. A guy who, there's a lot of hard feelings in when things end like they do here, but to go out of his way to try to get John the job. And I think it also speaks to, I wrote a little bit about this at The Athletic, but it speaks a little bit to how, obviously, they were friends. They worked together with the Patriots, John Robinson and Floyd Reese, but also like-minded. And I feel like Floyd has looked like, at the past few years, like, this is kind of how I would go about it. This is my kind of team that John Robinson is building.
It's a great story. It really is. And tells you all you need to know about Floyd and, his belief that in this league, it's a meritocracy, whether we're talking about players, whether we're talking about coaches or even executives. And he felt like John Robinson would be a great fit here. And you're right. He put aside, some bad feelings and called on John's behalf. And I thought that was just phenomenal. I really did. And you're right. I think, when you look at John, you see a lot of the same characteristics as you did in Floyd, all the way down to the jogging, part around the perimeter of the practice field or whatever. But, you're right. They were together at New England, and, he knew John pretty well. And I know that, when Floyd passed away on Saturday, a lot of people, I don't think, totally understood what a great resource John would have been for a story about Floyd Reese, because he knew him so well. But I don't think a lot of people totally knew the connection.
Yeah. Well, another thing John told me was, like, he's like, my phone, it's been constant, with people from around the league. That's another thing that, maybe I didn't quite comprehend either is like the importance of Floyd and the feeling for him around the league. Even like, you know, like my coworker, and I say in air quotes, Dan Pompey, who's been such a great NFL writer for so long, you know, he tweeted out that column about Floyd, and it was like, you know, about a guy who, you know, has touched a lot of us in the league. And I'm like, guy, and I never would have necessarily made the connection that like Dan Pompey or somebody would know Floyd Reese well. But, you know, when you're in this league for that long and you treat people the way he did, you know, that makes an impact. But it is interesting thinking about sort of this team or the organization as it is now as kind of hearkening back to Floyd's era. You know, because, first of all, I don't think there's any GM out there who says, you know, I want a team that's really white-collar and just skill but no toughness and guys who don't get along, right? I mean, everybody has the same general idea about building a team. But I do feel like some GMs, you know, you emphasize some things more than others. And I'd like to know if you buy into that, I guess, that the intangibles and just sort of the, I guess, you know, old school football is a big part of why Floyd was successful. It was different back then, but I mean, and if you think that John has some of that now.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we look at John, you know, again, John has done a really good job bringing in, you know, street free agents, you know, to augment the roster. And you look how many guys that he's brought in, you know, undrafted or journeymen around the league that he didn't pay a lot of money for, but have made contributions to this franchise. You know, another guy was Drew Bennett. You know, Drew Bennett came in here undrafted, a guy who was primarily a quarterback at UCLA. And again, Floyd was a scouting animal. You know, he came into the NFL as a strength coach, but you know, he was, you know, a great personnel guy. And, you know, you look back and you understand how Super Bowl teams, how successful teams are built. And again, Floyd hitting on the middle rounds of the draft. You go back to 98, you know, he not only got, you know, Kevin Dyson at number one, who, again, didn't put up huge numbers, but Samari Roll, a terrific player in the second round. Danon Sidney, who was a sometime starter at cornerback, who contributed to this team for 4 or 5 years. And then in the fourth round, as I mentioned, he got Joe Salavea. Fifth round, he got Benji Olson, who was a fixture at guard for a decade in the fifth round out of Washington. And then later on, you know, he got, you know, Kevin Long, who turned out to be an undersized but really effective starting center. And when you have drafts, a couple of drafts like that, it really improves your roster. And the Titans were a perennial stuck at 8-8 franchise. And I thought the 98 and 99 drafts really put them over the top. And, you know, it was, you know, going into the 99 season. You know, they had the sword of Damocles hanging over their heads. Playoffs or pink slips.
I was just going to bring that up.
And
yeah.
And Floyd and even Jeff really embraced that. And that, you know, they certainly got to the playoffs. They got all the way to the Super Bowl. Remember seeing Floyd on the field in Jacksonville when the Titans won the AFC Championship, you know, beating a really good Jags team who didn't lose to anybody that year except the Titans three times. But the Titans routed them in Jacksonville, and the Titans went to their first and, as it turns out, their only Super Bowl. And, you know, just seeing Floyd and seeing Bud and, you know, what that meant to both of them and to the franchise.
Yeah. I mean, as a general NFL fan, I remember that day, like, okay, the Jags are going to just take it out on the Titans for those two, right? I mean, there's no way they're losing a third down, and they'll probably win handily. And then you're just like, wow, I mean, just so impressive. You know, a few years ago.
Well, by the way, in that game, so you want to talk about a Floyd Reese game, the big turnaround in that game was keyed by a sack for a safety of Mark Brunell by Josh Evans, who was an undrafted free agent pickup, who was a dominating player for like 3 years and, you know, couldn't get past the weed thing, which at the time, you know, was really, you know, a huge thing in the NFL. And then on the ensuing free kick, Derek Mason,
right,
who was a middle round pick in 97, taking it to the house and really broke the game open. So there were a lot of components in that game. And, you know, you think about, you know, Frank Wycheck, my former radio partner, who was a guy that Floyd, you know, picked up off of waivers after the Redskins cut him. And Frank, you know, had a terrific run for almost a decade with the Titans. So you think about all of that, and those were all Floyd Reese pickups.
If you want to get in the discussion, remembering Floyd Reese, give us a call, give us a text. The phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Floyd in the context of Nashville and people who have kind of helped Nashville become the sports city it is today. Here on Robbie and Rex Show, Joe Rex Show, Mark Howard, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will. Sorry, Michelle. We'll be right back on Robbie and Rex Road. 102.5 The Game and Heineken are getting on the road with the Roadies to see Nashville SC take on Atlanta United Saturday, August 28th, this Saturday, in Atlanta. Join the Roadies on the road. All you have to do is enter. All you have to do to enter. Text or ride the bus, all one word, to 615-737-1025. Text ride the bus, all one word. Winner will receive two round-trip seats on the bus, two tickets in the Roadie section at the match at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, and a prize pack. Contest closes at 6 p.m. tomorrow. You must be 21 to enter. Welcome back, Robbie and Rexho, Joe Rexho, Mark Howard, Michelle Knezovic, whose name I will not botch again today, I promise.
Thanks, Joe.
Probably shouldn't promise anything, but I will try my best. Robbie just has it down so well. And intern Will, all here on Robbie and Rexho. We're remembering Floyd Reese. And Mark, another aspect of Floyd, I think it's, I'm sure that, you know, this has come up for various GMs at various times of professional sports where new franchise or, you know, expansion, or you just move to a place where, you know, your job isn't just to put players on your team. It's to try to get people to come watch your team. But I feel like the story, you know, of the Titans moving from Texas to Tennessee, first of all, incredibly bumpy early. You mentioned the playoffs or pink slips. Our friend Paul Kaharski had a great piece at paulkaharski.com after Floyd passed away Saturday. I didn't realize – I knew that term. I didn't even realize it was a Kaharski story that they – and they pinned it up on the wall. But just some of the stories he had and then others have told about those early days. You know, Paul, he wrote a story about the families being upset about having to go to Memphis back and forth, and just what a just disaster Memphis was. But Floyd Reese clearly had a lot to do with also kind of spreading the word and trying to build this fan base, this grassroots fan base, in a college football region.
There were a lot of moving parts involved in all of that. And the man above Floyd in those years was a guy named Mike McClure, who was a good guy, but I think he clashed with the football executives and coaching staff about the way that they were handling the Memphis thing. And it was tough. I mean, I always talk about, what really, cemented in Bud Adams' mind that the Titans were one and done in Memphis, that they would play at Vanderbilt in 98. They were supposed to play in Memphis in 97 and 98. And then, of course, the new stadium. But the last regular season game of the year, the Titans didn't go to the playoffs that year, but they won to finish 8-8. And Bruce Matthews with the classic line, we needed to score early to take the crowd out of the game because all these Steeler fans had shown up. And it was almost like, Pittsburgh South. And for the players, never having really a home game and having to travel. And for the families, you're right. I thought Jeff and Floyd did a great job of trying not to make that a distraction. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, we didn't, as somebody, new to covering the team, and Paul, had at least been with them in Houston, so, he had a little more context. We didn't totally understand the whole, 8-8, slog that they were caught in for a few years, and how, Bud, it was driving Bud crazy. He put that mandate down. So, yeah, we knew about the playoffs or pink slips, but, we had not lived with it. We were all so happy to have a team here. We didn't totally appreciate the magnitude of taking that step from 8-8 to playoff team. But yeah, you know, they managed to get through the transition. You know, guys, important guys stayed with the franchise. The only real important player I think they lost in the mid to late 90s was Michael Barrow, you know, who was a really good linebacker who went to the Giants. But Floyd, you know, again, had those good drafts. And, you know, I always said, you know, Titans fans kind of got spoiled because the first year they're in the stadium, they make the run to the Super Bowl. The Music City right. Miracle happens. They win at Indy. They win at Jacksonville. They almost win the Super Bowl. And then, you know, the 2000 season, you know, what are you going to do for an encore? They have a great regular season and just lose that heartbreaking game against the Ravens. But, you know, after that, the bar was set pretty high. But at the time, you're right. Paul did a good job of you know, really putting into context, you know, that whole playoff or pink slips thing, because a lot of us didn't know how big an issue it really was.
So when you consider Floyd, you know, a lot of people were a part of that. A lot of people have been a part of other things in this city in terms of making it, you know, the major league city it is today. I mean, how does Floyd fit into that picture?
He's huge. You know, he built that team. He was smart enough to give, and maybe part of it was Bud too, of giving Jeff Fisher the autonomy to you know, hire and fire as he pleased with his staff. There wasn't a lot of clashing over that. There were clashing over draft picks. That seemed to be, you know, sort of the territory they fought over. But you know, Floyd was huge, not only because of what he built, but also how he helped. Like you said, he helped sell the team. And even though it was the NFL, and the NFL to a certain degree sells itself, he was a great ambassador for the franchise and for the league. And he was a lot of people's entree into pro sports in this town. And I think it, you know, just like David Poyle, you know, very important, you know, that David, being the person that he is, was really the perfect guy, you know, to come to Nashville and bring a hockey franchise in, as well as Barry Trotz. The Titans had that with Jeff and Floyd in a much less forgiving, you know, market, you know, when it came to football, because, you know, the fans in this city feel like they know football. But, yeah, I mean, all of it came together, and, you know, that stadium became a really great place to be, especially the first 4 or 5 years after it was built.
Yeah, well, again, from afar, from my perspective, remember, you know, just watching games on TV from Adelphi, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they've got like a Tennessee Vols college crowd at an NFL
exactly,
you know, stadium. I mean, it was absolutely like one of the stories of the league was like, holy cow. But as you said, I mean, it helps when you, all of a sudden, you have this team that all comes together. And it's such a good team, right?
And the thing, you know, the one thing about Nashville that I learned early on, I got here in 1986. And even though, you know, this is primarily Tennessee Volunteer country, the city is segmented. You know, there are TSU fans, there are Vandy fans, there are Alabama fans, there are Kentucky fans. Yeah, you can divide that up. You know, a lot of different ways. And, you know, when it came to the NFL, you know, at first, when I was at Channel 5, before we got a franchise, we used to do surveys. You know, what's your favorite team? And the Steelers were always big, the Falcons, the Cowboys, the Bears, believe it or not, going back to Bill Wade, you know, who was a big star at Vanderbilt, yeah. Won an NFL championship with the Bears in 1963. So this city was sort of divided, but the Titans became everybody's team. And that was a byproduct of what Floyd Rees, you know, was able to accomplish.
If you'd like to get in on the conversation, text or call the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A little bit off topic here on the text line, but important to mention from Ben. Humphreys County here, please be safe if you come out here to help with this flooding catastrophe. We need people, equipment for weeks to come, so don't be shy. All donations welcome, except we have plenty of clothes already. This is according to Ben. Thanks and God bless. Just a brutal situation on Humphreys County. Awful. And any sort of help that you can provide. I know there's a lot of movements right now to get that going. So, and we should have more information on that today as well. Also on Floyd Reese, just to remind everyone, you know, we're going to have Corey Curtis on at 8, Jim Wyatt at 9, and then Blake Bedingfield at 9:30. John Robinson's going to be on Darren Donick and Chase today. And then Jared Stillman and Company is going to be all Floyd, very fittingly. And he's going to have Nick Saban, Derek Mason, Chris Sanders, John Clayton, Steve Watterson, Mike Keith. They're all going to be on Jared to talk about Floyd today. We are going to pivot for a bit here, talk Titans, talk Mike Vrabel, COVID positive, and about this past preseason game. And, of course, the Bears coming up Saturday in the final preseason game. That'll be next here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will. In the wholesaling studio powered by RumbleOn.com. We're going to talk some Titans here and some Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel, Mark, has a press conference yesterday. It's going to be an in-person press conference at noon. It's going to be a Zoom press conference, which for me, and still in Florida, not back yet, I was like, okay, well, I can participate or you know, watch it. And, of course, Mike comes on and immediately announces that he had just tested positive for COVID-19. He had a sore throat and an earache in the morning and tested positive. And as of now, there are no other positives known. I know that, like, well, I can tell you that today, media covering Titans, we took our tests. I went and got the swab right before the show started. So, you know, there's a lot of waiting on that. But in the meantime, you know, Mike Vrabel, who, of course, is vaccinated. I think every coach in this league, at least coach who deals with players, is vaccinated. But this does bring up the short-term situation for the Titans. I mean, it's going to be very different for the Titans. I mean, I'm interested to go out there today at the practice field and not have Vrabel and that voice commanding everything and, you know, leading the team.
Well, when he had been away from the team previously, as you know, he had special teams coordinator Craig Aukerman, you know, pretty much running the show. You know, this time around, it would make sense to me to have Jim Schwartz, who does not have a specific duty, to maybe be there in his stead. And Jim, of course, has been a head coach. Like I said, I mean, I'm not out there every day like you are. But that would be my best guess. But he has to have two positive tests or two negative tests,
right?
In 48 hours, and then what? He still has to sit out 10 days.
If you get the two negatives and two negatives in 48, then you're good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
If not, then it's 10 days.
Ah.
So
okay.
It's basically whatever comes first. And like he said, I mean, as of yesterday, he had the PCR test, which is more accurate, that he was waiting on today. He expects it to be positive because I think he had already had two tests as of yesterday. You know, a couple things come up with this. One is, you know, clearly with the vaccine, you're still able to – I mean, there's transmission, probably more than some people thought or hoped. It's also – I mean, I think, you know, and hopefully Vrabel will be like he was yesterday with a – slight cough and joking around about being in Lake Amulet yelling at the guys from afar. And, you know, I mean, the point of the vaccine is to protect you so that, you know, you don't have serious issues. And sadly, in this city, we've got examples of, you know, people who are unvaccinated having serious issues and passing away.
Saturday, you know, talk about losing Floyd. I mean, the city took a double whack. You know, Phil Valentine, not on this station, obviously, but a pretty influential radio voice, not only locally but nationally. Somebody that I've known for 30 years and was friendly with, you know, didn't always agree, you know, with his politics and whatever. But a guy who advised his listeners, you know, not to get vaccinated, advised against it, didn't get vaccinated and died of COVID-19. At age 61, otherwise healthy, before contracting the COVID-19. And that one really stayed with me, I got to admit. I mean, it's just awful and unnecessary. But yeah, and then Vrabel, of course, we find out on Sunday.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's just too many stories right now, and in particular, stories from people. A nurse at Vanderbilt last week just was compelled to, to do a video in the Tennessean, picked it up. That's where I saw it. But, basically just about she was emotional and broken down from watching people who refuse to get vaccinated pass away. And, of course, the ICU full, and which, of course, affects other people who may need to come in for serious things. I mean, it's the same thing we talk about over and over again. But, she said, yeah, there are people who are testing positive. And those people are the ones that go home and hug their spouse and their kids again. So the way the Vrabel thing fits into this, of course, as you said earlier, Mark, the Bucks now are hoping that there's not like an outbreak because of this. And I think people talking to each other outside is a lot better than talking to each other close inside. But that's going to be something to follow. Obviously, the Titans and the rest of the organization. And then the question of, look, the vaccinations, we know that teams that aren't vaccinated get punished, right? The NFL has drawn a hard line on that. But certainly it's possible that there's going to be another year of, like, positive tests and people with COVID and disruptions, or at least disruptions to rosters going into games and so on. I mean, it looks like another mess.
And it's going to be really interesting, whether it's the pro game or the college game, what's going to happen when teams have to start forfeiting games if that situation presents itself.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. I mean, it feel like the NFL has done incredibly well, right? I mean, look, that mandate essentially, not a mandate, but it was like putting down the stakes, has been tremendous. I mean, the league has gotten vaccinated at a very high rate. Now, in college, it's been a little bit more up and down. You see Brian Harsin at Auburn, positive with COVID-19, and a guy who apparently just has not been pushing his team to get the vaccine, which to me is like outrageously irresponsible of him. You got Lane Kiffin and 100% at Ole Miss. I mean, it's, these coaches can have a lot of say in this and helping people be safe. And so in the college game, I think you're going to have some variance. But in the NFL, I mean, I don't know the latest numbers of the worst teams, but they're not bad either. They're pretty high. So that's going to be just really interesting to see how it goes.
Well, the story about Ron Rivera, who is immunocompromised because, he's coming off of cancer treatment, and his frustrations about the unvaccinated players on his team because it puts him in danger. It's not so much, about you. It's about other people. And some people fail to grasp that. I don't get it. I just don't. I don't want to, set off a whole other political argument, which is ridiculous to me. But
it's not politics, though.
I know some people have made it politics, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, I got my third vaccination, and, I feel like I can go around without a mask and feel pretty safe about it.
You got the booster?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's good. I mean, as soon as I can get more, I'll take it. I mean, it's safe and it's been incredibly effective. As far as the Titans, first of all, we have a team right now. You saw it Saturday. A lot of those starters on defense were out on the field. But, I mean, I haven't seen the starting offensive line in a long time. Haven't seen Julio Jones on the field in a long time. A.J. Brown, not much. Derrick Henry, to me, is a different situation. That's, put him on ice, see you September 12th. But there's a lot, there are a lot of guys who are a little bit banged up, nicked up, nothing serious, but haven't been around. And now your head coach is not going to be on the practice field during a pretty important time. What's the football concern level there?
They've gone, 16, 17 practices without the offense practicing as a whole, and yeah, keep Derrick Henry in bubble wrap, you know, until the Arizona game. But and let's face it, with Julio Jones, yeah, he ran before the Tampa game, but there's an injury there. There's something. Maybe during the regular season, he'd be playing, right. But I don't know if we're going to see him, you know, against the Bears on Saturday. We're going to see most of the starters play 5 to 15 snaps on Saturday. We'll see Tannehill for the first time. But yeah, you know, the offensive line, you know, we're seeing their offensive line depth, not very good. You know, and still, you know, who's going to be the starter at right tackle? But, you know, even on the interior line, Aaron Brewer needs to get healthy fast because their depth doesn't look very good right now in that area. So, yeah, even though the Titans are 2-0, having a lot of touchdown, as you stated, there are some areas of the team that look really good. Wide receiver, you know, Mason Kinsey, you know, doing Rudy, the NFL version, you know, but he's probably not going to make the team. But they've got a lot of depth at wide receiver, even outside linebacker, even at rush linebacker. They look pretty good. But, you know, other areas, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. They're, I like, you know, what I'm seeing on the D-line. Thierre Tart, you know, just an incredible transformation in his second season. You know, but who's going to be their fourth defensive lineman? You know, we're not sure yet. So we thought it was going to be Naquan Jones is maybe the highest profile undrafted free agent, but others have jumped ahead of him. So yeah, there are areas of this team that look really good, and then there are other areas of this team, largely to me, the offensive line, that are concerning, and the cornerback position continues to be sort of a work in progress.
All right, we're going to get into that and really dig in on what we saw Saturday night and takeaways moving forward in this Bears game. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And here is a word.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.